The writer of Psalms 119, 105 wrote, "Thy word," meaning God's word, "is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." And King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 3, "There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die," and it goes on. Today's text tells us, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. God has blessed me through my 74 years of life. I have been blessed in so many ways. I gave my life to the Lord when I was 7 years old. Throughout all these years, I've had many challenges and many, many rewards. A few months ago, Kelly suggested that the next time I was scheduled to share with you, we do a flashback Sunday. Now, for some strange reason, she thought that I should wear a powder blue leisure suit and have my hair slicked back. Well, I do not own a powder blue leisure suit and never have. And I do not have enough hair to slick it back. But we are going to have a flashback Sunday. I worried about the reception of this message. I have worried about the reception of this message because this message is not about me. I'm going to repeat that. This message is not about me, but it's a message about how God is and will and has worked in my life. When I was serving the Grants Pass Church of God back in the 80s, I had a young man serving as my intern. One Monday morning, he came marching into my office and informed me that I was preaching incorrectly, as my messages did not have 3 points. Well, today, I do have a 3-point message. And the first point is, learn from life. Some people will try to read in Romans 8:28 an interpretation which would say, God works good into all things. However, that is not true. Not everything that's going to happen in your life is going to be good. All you have to do is look around, and you can see that there are a lot of bad things happening in the world. I could give you a list. You can make a list of your own. But I'm not here today to talk about bad things. My focus point is, whatever happens to you, learn from it. The phrase, everything happens for a reason, is relatively harmless until you run into someone who thinks it's a good thing to say something at a time of death. Now, this is a true story of a lady leaving an evening church service. She fell down a flight of stairs outside the church, and she broke her hip. She had the required surgery, but instead of healing, she progressively declined and in a few days died. During the night of the visitation before the funeral, the pastor was standing beside the bereaved husband. Many people went up to the husband to offer their sympathies, and some tried to console him. God must have had a plan in this, so accept it. It's God's will, and we must live by it. Somehow God planned this to test your faith, another offered. There is a silver lining in every cloud. You will find God's reason behind this eventually. Do you know what each of these friends were saying? They were saying something that sounded very spiritual. Everything happens for a reason. And that does sound spiritual, until you consider the flip side of their meaning. Your wife died because God had planned for her to die. Does that sound like a good thing to tell someone? Of course not. The pastor left the funeral home filled with anger, and he raged against their babbling, as he called it. And arriving home, he went to his study, and he rewrote the beginning of his funeral message. The next day, he began his message with these words, "My God does not push old ladies down church steps." And then he proceeded to explain that God cannot be blamed or accused for all the brokenness in the world. If God is the author of death, how can he be at the same time the author of life, as shown through the resurrection that we celebrate each Sunday? During college, I was very blessed. I became a campus leader. I was elected to the student council in the spring of my freshman year. During my sophomore year, I ran for president of the Oregon Students Intercollegiate Council. I lost. My junior year, I served as the Ford Foundation political intern at the Oregon Legislature. I was elected president of my dorm and president of the interdorm council. When I was 22, I ran for the Oregon House of Representatives. I lost. 2 years later, I ran for the Milwaukee City Council and was elected. 2 years later, at the age of 26, I was sworn in as mayor of my hometown. That summer, I was elected Speaker of the House for the Oregon JC's mock legislature. Life was good to me, but there was something missing. I had been very active in church until I left for college. I knew that God was at college with me when I needed him. My Bible was on my bookshelf in my dorm room. I prayed to God before each exam, but I was not active in my walk with God. There was a hollowness within me. And still outwardly, I was doing well, and I was successful in the eyes of the people. From 1960 to 1978, God was nearby, and I summoned him on occasion in times of need. And then in October 1978, my favorite aunt died of painful death from cancer. The following March of 1979, my youngest brother shot and killed his roommate, and then shot and killed himself in front of me. Before I could do anything about it. 6 weeks later, his mother, my stepmother, died of a heart attack. October 1979, my maternal grandfather had a heart attack. And in trying to get out of the chair to get help, he tipped his pipe over in the chair, caught the chair on fire, which got the house on fire, which burnt his body. 4 horrific deaths within exactly 1 year. God did not cause those deaths, but God allowed me to learn from those 4 horrific deaths. I was working at Albertsons. One of our customers was a minister. We'd become friends over the counter. I discovered that he was then pastoring the church that had sponsored my kindergarten class 32 years previously. The church had moved out of its old building, and they built a beautiful new facility. When my brother died, my stepmother asked me to find a minister to officiate at the service. And I called Jim, and he agreed to officiate. 6 weeks later, I called him again when my stepmother died of a massive heart attack. He agreed to once again assist us. And then October arrived, and my grandfather died. My mother asked me to call and see if he would do one more service for us. And again, he agreed. But this time he said, "You know, Frank, as often as I am helping you, you should become a member of our church." What was going on here? What was God up to? Why did he want me in that church? Now, I knew many of the school teachers and the politicians who attended that particular congregation. So I agreed to attend one day. When I did attend, it felt good being back in church. I felt welcomed at the church. But I was not going to get involved in any activities. Thanksgiving time arrived. The pastor's wife was the choir director and also the head of the kitchen. And she called with a request. "Frank, I know that you once owned a restaurant. I'm so busy with the music. Will you head up the kitchen crew for our annual Thanksgiving dinner?" Before I knew what had happened, I answered, "Sure." Wait a minute. What's going on here? I wasn't going to get involved in any church activities. Fortunately, the dinner was a success. Then the Christmas season arrived. The phone rang. It was Jane again. "Frank, the church has a tradition of having a slightly sophisticated sanctuary supper. I'm just so busy I cannot do it. Will you help me and take charge of this?" I responded, "Sure." "Wait, what's going on here?" Our scripture verse today, "And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." As I became more involved and more active, I heard that the congregation was splitting into two groups, those supporting the pastor and those trying to get rid of him. And I was deeply troubled by this. And I wrote a letter to the church council, stating my concern over the division of the congregation and saying that I felt the two sides needed to come together and discuss the issue openly and find a peaceful solution. The phone rang again. And this time it was the chairman of the church council. There was a vacancy on the board of trustees. He wanted to know if I would accept the appointment. "Sure," I said. "What was happening? God, what are you doing?" And fall was approaching, and it was time to pledge our financial support to the church. No one told me that being the newest member on the board, I had to bring the message to the church regarding the need to financially support it. Pledge Sunday arrived, and I delivered my message. After church, I went home. That afternoon, the phone rang again. It was Pastor Jim. "Frank, I want you to deliver a sermon. When you're ready, let me know, and you will bring the morning message." I replied, "Sure, you bet." "Are you kidding? I don't know the first thing about that." "Let me know when you're ready," was the only response from Pastor Jim. A couple of months later, I called him and told him that I was ready. Deep down inside, I was hoping he would say that I didn't need to do it. But God had a different plan. Jim responded, "Good. You will bring the message the first Sunday in January." And he then told me that he would not even be in church that Sunday. I had to lead the entire service, even the liturgy. And after that, I was expected to have a message prepared that could be delivered whenever he decided he was going to be gone. Sadly, Pastor Jim submitted his resignation, and I was asked to become the chair of the Pastor Seeking Committee. We called an interim pastor who agreed to serve for 6 months, and then he was going to leave to become a camp director. Pastor Arden and I became good friends. Believe it or not, he even had me playing racquetball with him. Now that's unusual. Oh, and by the way, besides being on the board of trustees and chairman of the pastor seeking committee, I was also now on the board of deacons and teaching a Wednesday afternoon adult Bible class and serving as the assistant to our pastor. I wasn't going to get involved in anything in church. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. In the meantime, I was still working at Albertson's. I was single, and truthfully, I enjoyed being single at that time. A member of the congregation was an alcoholic, and he kept bugging me about going out on his boat for a cruise. So to shut him up, I finally consented to go out on the river with him one Saturday afternoon. As the day approached, I thought of calling Joe and canceling out. However, I did not. As we got on the boat, Joe's wife, Trish, and her girlfriend were also there. I discovered I had been set up, as did Trish's friend, Teresa. She later confided to me that she had almost canceled out that Saturday also. And by the end of the picnic on Ross Island, I knew I was going to marry that young lady, and I did, 8 months later. That was 32 years ago, this coming May. And we laugh frequently that God used a drunk to introduce us. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. Most people get married and go on honeymoons. The day after our wedding, I became the interim pastor of the congregation and another church that we had yoked with. And this is because the two churches were not yet ready to call a pastor. So that meant two sermons every Sunday morning. Teresa and Trish and I would leave the church on Flavel and cruise into the parking lot at the Milwaukee church just as the choir was leading the second hymn. And in time, the two congregations called their new pastor. Teresa and I talked it over and decided that I should enter Warner Pacific College for some Bible and counseling classes, as I wanted to open a Christian counseling center. I was not planning on becoming a congregational pastor. Before we knew what happened, I was called by Pastor Sam Dunbar and Ray Tuttle. They asked if I would consent to serve as a weekend pastor at the little only community church 17 miles up the Youngs River outside of Astoria. Now, Teresa and I thought this would really be great because we're newlyweds, and we got paid for going to the beach every weekend. We worshiped with the little congregation for a few months, and New Year's arrived, and they asked if we would move down to their community. We did not feel the calling. We thanked them for the honor of worshiping with them, and the state officers told us that they didn't have any other assignments for us at the time. Teresa and I said that was fine. A couple weeks later, on a stormy, rainy, gray, thundering, late January Saturday morning, Pastor Dunbar called our home. I was at work at Albertson's. Teresa took the call. He wanted us to visit Grants Pass. Teresa's response was, "Pray tell, where is Grants Pass?" And our lives were changed forever. That weekend visit turned out ended 7 years later when we moved to Oregon City. Now remember, when Teresa and I were dating, I confided that I wanted to be a Christian counselor, and I wanted to work with people experiencing grief. God had spoken to me during those four tragic family deaths within that year. So for at least a year after those deaths, I purchased every textbook I could find on understanding death, grief, and bereavement. All my spare time was spent reading everything I could find on my hands, I could find and get my hands on. I lived death. I ate death. And I felt a calling to the field of thanatology, the study of death. I never felt that I really ever wanted to be a pastor. However, God certainly had another idea. God did not cause those four family deaths. However, he was using those four deaths to open the door to a new Christian opportunity for me. I had the free will to decide if I was going to walk through that door of opportunity or close that door and stay in the comfort of my known world. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. We know this world is full of good things and bad things. We all have been in this world for a while. And you will, in all likelihood, experience both good and bad. But look at what the verse says. All things work together for the good to those who love God. And I encourage you to learn from all your experiences, both good and bad. Learn from them and grow from them. Paul, the writer of much of the New Testament, said it best when he wrote, "I have learned to be content in whatever circumstance I am in. I know how to get along with little, and I also know how to live with a lot. And every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled, and I have learned the secret of going hungry," he wrote in Philippians 4:11. As you travel through life, I encourage you to learn from all the things that you experience. Here is an important secret. Education does not stop when you finally walk out of the school for the last time. Life is the greatest classroom there is. Learn from it. We had settled into our new assignment in Grants Pass. Teresa had been transferred to her company's office in Medford, and one day a letter arrived at the church from the sheriff of Josephine County. He was inviting all of the ministers of the county to come and meet with him. It was slow in the office that day that the meeting was scheduled. I was available, so I went to the meeting. Earlier, I had written a proposal to the two hospitals in Grants Pass to create a hospital chaplaincy program. My idea was turned down by the two administrators, as they believed the only reason the ministers wanted to be chaplains was so that they could get the patients to attend their church. And during the sheriff's meeting, he said that he wanted to create a sheriff's office chaplaincy program. It was like the seat I was sitting on had been electrified. I was jumping up, standing up, and volunteering before the words were, I think, totally out of the sheriff's mouth. I was selected to be the senior chaplain. And it was my assignment to write, develop, and administer the program. I was also responsible for training and supervising the other chaplains. And for the next 6 years, I was honored to serve as a senior chaplain with the Josephine County Sheriff's Office and pastor of the Grants Pass First Church of God. God was providing the education I needed to fulfill my dream of becoming a chaplain and grief counselor. And I could write a book on the education, the training, and wonderful experiences I received. Of course, there were those more tragic events. Murders, suicides, airplane crashes, accidental shootings, car accident deaths, working with families to disconnect life support, rapes of both men and women, hostage negotiation, death notification, child sexual abuse, 9 high school students shootings in 1 year, and some deaths within that year. And the list goes on and on and on, more than I can possibly recall. In addition, the two hospitals were calling the sheriff's office almost daily to request that I assist them with tragic and death cases. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Pretty soon you're going to be able to recite that verse with me. And then financial support ended due to county cutbacks. It was time to move. When we served 7 years at the Oregon City Church, the medical chaplaincy education continued. I answered God's call to believe in him, as I said, when I was 7 years old. I did not answer his first call into the ministry when I received it when I was 18 years old. And I am one of those blessed to have heard the call to the ministry the second time. And at the age of 37, I answered God's call to serve his people. He knew that I needed a lot of experience to understand hurting people and what they were going through. And through serving him as an interim pastor of a yoke congregation, serving him as a small pastor of a small remote congregation, he allowed Teresa and I to answer that call to serve the Grants Pass congregation. And there I was given an education that I could never receive in any college or university. I had the academic credentials, but not the experience of reality. When serving the Oregon City congregation, I was asked to become the coordinator of the volunteer chaplaincy program at Willamette Falls Hospital. There, I had another opportunity of learning. And in time, God opened the door of opportunity to serve with the Legacy Health Systems. And being a teaching medical system of 5 hospitals, I had the opportunity of serving in the emergency department, in the burn center, in the birthing center, in adolescent and adult psych center, pediatrics and general surgery and medical, as well as being a pastor to the hospital staff. I was privileged to serve people of all faith systems. And then I was called into the field of biomedical ethics consultation. What an exciting service. What an experience to assist families and medical staff in arriving at the best medical and ethical decisions for the patient. And also, what a responsibility to write and sign the ethical decisions to allow a patient to be removed from life support and allow them to die a natural death. And in time, God opened the door for me to become director of spiritual care for Legacy Hospice and continue to work as an ethics consultant. For the next 13 years, I was privileged to work with the dying and their families. The second part of this message is learn what has real value. Many of you probably know that I love learning. I am a professional student. I will always be a perpetual student. Education, however, is more than going to school. Although I'm certainly pro-formal education, education is learning to treat others with respect, being honest, and having a sense of integrity about yourself. It means knowing the difference between right and wrong when a choice must be made. It is choosing that which is right every time. Remember, your friends may come and your friends may go. Jobs may change and you may live halfway around the world. But there is someone who will always be with you wherever you go. And that person is you. Honesty, integrity, and faithfulness are qualities that show through your character. In fact, they are your character. Live life so that you can look at yourself in the mirror and see a person who does not stand ashamed of anything. If you mess up in life, admit it. Seek forgiveness and move on. Learn these things which have real value. And the third point of this message is learn who God is. Let's look one more time at Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. Did you notice that God is mentioned two times in this verse? The first time he is mentioned in the verse speaks about the relationship with him. He's able to cause all things to work together for our good if we love him. God has created us to be in a relationship with other people, but he's also created us to have a relationship with him. If I have a relationship with him, he's able to cause all things to work together for my good. If you have a relationship with him, he's able to cause all things to work together for your good. What this tells me is that there are situations or circumstances that will come my way that I may not like. But if I have a relationship with God, I can gain from that experience. I may feel down and discouraged. I may be disappointed and devastated. I may feel dumped or deserted. But if I have a relationship with him, I can know, and I do know with certainty, that he will cause all things to work together for my good. Throughout the years, I've learned that I need God in everything I do. I can do nothing on my own. Every time I was on my way to visit with a family, I had to pray, "Lord, please go before me. Fill me with your wisdom. I do not know what to say. Please put your words in my mouth." And as I arrived at that destination, I could feel God's presence. I knew he was with me and that he would give me the words that I needed to reach that particular family. And I know that God is still with me. I remember Thanksgiving 1989. Frankie, our son, was 7 months old. I received a page from the sheriff's dispatch to meet an ambulance at one of the local hospitals. I was to meet the parents of a 7-month-old baby boy, a victim of sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS. As I entered the emergency department, I felt an anguishing gloom. A young physician was tearfully standing over in the corner. The deputy, a new grandfather, who had been at the home, was overcome with grief. The parents were in the quiet room with a nurse. I felt torn as to who should I speak to first. Praying rapidly, I then approached the physician to speak with him. After listening to him and reassuring him, I felt that he would be able to handle the next emergency that came into the hospital. I then spoke to the deputy. He was devastated, and I had the authority to relieve him from duty, so I sent him home. And then I felt I was able to help the family. After an hour or two of visiting with the parents, we decided it was time to have the funeral chapel come to take their son into their care. When the funeral director arrived, the mother was unable to allow him to take her child. As I supported the mother, I prayed, "Lord, how are we going to help these parents?" And shortly I felt I was given a solution. And I asked the mother if she felt she was able to take her son over to the funeral chapel and to place him in the arms of the funeral director. She thought about it and said that she thought she could do that. So I left the room. I asked the funeral director if he would return to the chapel, stand by the open door with his arms outstretched, and allow the mother to place her son into his arms. And being a grandmother or grandfatherly man, who I knew was a Christian, he agreed to my idea, which really was God's idea. He left, and I escorted the parents to my squad car. And after the parents were in the car, I placed her son into his mom's arms, and she cuddled him as we drove to the funeral chapel. When we approached the chapel, the director was standing by the open door with his arms outstretched. The mom got out of the car, walked up to the director, and gently placed her son into his arms. She said, "Please, take care of my son. I will take good care of him. He is safe," the director said. She could not let someone take her son from her, but she could give her son to someone who would keep him safe. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Because of the relationship that I have with God, I can live a life of hope because I know that God is on my side. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. And we all face trials and triumphs throughout life because that's what life is made of. But having a relationship with God can make all the difference in the world as to how it all depends on how we handle it. I pray that your cup will be overflowing with triumphs. But first and foremost, I pray you will build a personal relationship with God, because God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose. Learn from life. Learn what has real value. And learn who God is. For the God of the mountain is still God in the valley.